This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 160 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Analyzing player value each week in fantasy football can be pretty complex. Volume drives the game, so that's first and foremost what you need to be looking for. But volume can be swayed by individual on-the-field matchups, coaching decisions, and game script. So when looking at whether or not you should be high or low on a player in a given week, you've got to account for those player-to-player matchups, you've got to account for how the game might be played out, and you've got to account for coaching tendencies. There's a lot that goes into it. On this weekly episode, I'm going to look at a handful of relevant players across fantasy football and explain why I'm up or down on them during that given week. It's not a start-sit show like we saw last year, but it'll be one where I'm explaining to you guys which players I'm higher on and lower on versus the consensus in a given week. And the goal of the show isn't only to give you guys some actionable advice, but like anything else that I do with the Late Round Podcast, it's to explain and help you guys create sound process. That's what's most important in fantasy football. Before digging into this week's matchups, I wanted to let you guys know about NumberFire Premium. With award-winning daily fantasy football tools, survivor pool picks, gambling predictions, and premium content from our top experts, NumberFire Premium has everything you need to dominate in 2018. Best of all, Late Round Podcast listeners get their first month of any level of premium access for just $9.99 with promo code CHAMPION. For more info, visit numberfire.com/premium. That's numberfire.com/premium. My top streamer this week at quarterback is Andy Dalton, who's playing at Indianapolis in a game with a pretty high over-under. I'm a believer that the Bengals are going to see a rebound offensively this year after a down season in 2017. They ran the fewest plays in the league and had a coordinator change in the early parts of last season, and that really ruined them from a real and a fantasy standpoint. This year, the offensive line got a boost, Joe Mixon has a year under his belt, and John Ross is looking the part as a perfect complement to AJ Green. That's all going to help Andy Dalton. What's also going to help Andy Dalton is a matchup against the Colts. Indianapolis probably has the worst secondary in football, and they've got the absolute worst defense entering the year according to NumberFire's expected points model. Given Dalton is available in the majority of waiver wires, he should be this week's top streaming quarterback option. Tyrod Taylor is another player that you should be able to get off the waiver wire and start. I actually think that the Browns match up pretty well against Pittsburgh. The Steelers have holes at inside linebacker and at safety, which can be exploited by the interior weapons that Cleveland has in Jarvis Landry when he moves inside, potentially Duke Johnson, and definitely David Njoku. I won't be talking about Njoku later, but I love me some David Njoku this week. The betting line in this game has continued to move in Cleveland's favor, which makes me feel even more comfortable with the Browns' offense. Given Tyrod's rushing ability, he's not only got a nice floor, but a nice ceiling as well this week. So if you're in a pinch, you could do a lot worse. I would actually play Tyrod Taylor ahead of the two guys that I'm down on this week, which I'll get into right now. The first of those two guys is Pat Mahomes. Now, I love Mahomes' potential in the league, and I think he's got a hell of a ceiling in real and fantasy football, especially with the weapons that he has. But the Chargers have one of the most talented secondaries in football. They gave up just one top 10 performance in fantasy football last year after week one, and that one performance was the Tom Brady. I'd be comfortable playing both Andy Dalton and Tyrod Taylor over Pat Mahomes this week as a result of the matchup. And the same goes for Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy G is traveling to Minnesota, where he'll more than likely be playing in a negative game script. And just so you guys are aware, negative game scripts aren't good for quarterbacks. There's actually no correlation between pass attempts and fantasy points scored on a week-to-week basis, assuming your quarterback is throwing 20 or more times. It's all about touchdowns. And I'm not sure Jimmy G has a ton of upside against a Minnesota secondary that was really dominant last year, allowing the third fewest points to the quarterback position. I've got a new article that I'm writing each week on NumberFire called The Report, and in that article, there's a chart that shows how defenses defended the left, middle, and right areas of the field last year. And I'll update it as the season progresses. And according to that chart, Minnesota was amazing at each level, but they were especially amazing on the perimeter thanks to cornerback Xavier Rhodes. So I'm worried about this matchup for Jimmy G, and I'm a little bit worried about his pass catchers as well. Now, I've got a deep play quarterback as well, and I wouldn't play this quarterback ahead of Garoppolo or Mahomes, but that quarterback that I'm intrigued by is Case Keenum. He's going up against the Seahawks, and the Seahawks are without a ton of key pieces from their 2017 defense. And it was a defense that ranked 13th in the NFL last year, according to NumberFire's metrics. They more than likely won't have a similar pass rush as last season either without Michael Bennett and Sheldon Richardson. And according to Pro Football Focus, Case Keenum had a top 10 passer rating when the pocket was clean last year. Earl Thomas may or may not be active, but in the last 2 years without Thomas, the Seahawks have allowed a touchdown on roughly 5% of the opposing pass attempts when that number is less than 3% with Thomas on the field. But regardless, if Earl Thomas is there or not, I do think Case Keenum is a sneaky play against a defense that's not nearly as good as it was in 2017. We know he has strong weapons, he's at home, the Broncos are favorites. He's a sneaky deep play for desperate teams. At running back, I was surprised to see that some analysts seemed to be a little bit lower than me with Jamal Williams this week. His Fantasy Pros consensus ranking was at RB22 at the time of this recording, but I'd confidently play him over players like Royce Freeman and Lamar Miller. The matchup itself isn't necessarily ideal. Chicago actually had a top 10 defense last year according to NumberFire's schedule adjusted metrics, and they just added Khalil Mack. But like I said at the top, volume is everything. With Aaron Jones suspended, Williams will likely take the majority of Green Bay's work and see goal line touches. And the Packers are pretty big favorites in this contest, which should allow a positive game script and even more touches for Jamal Williams. So like I said, I think he's more in the firm RB2 position than the low end one that a lot of analysts seem to have him as. I also really like Derrick Henry this week. I think there's reason to not be overly optimistic with the Titans' backfield right away because we don't exactly know how the carries are going to be split between Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. But the Dolphins no longer have Ndamukong Suh, and he was a really big run-stopping anchor for them last year. In fact, the Dolphins were one of the best teams in football at preventing rushing yards down the middle of the field, allowing only 3.16 yards per carry in that area of the field. If the Titans get into a positive game script, which could happen given that they're road favorites, then Derrick Henry should benefit. The Dolphins' rush defense and defense in general should be attackable this year. The last running back that I'm higher on than consensus is James White. New England is usually pretty logical with their talent usage because they attack weaknesses of opposing defenses, or they at least avoid the strengths of opposing defenses. And the Texans' defensive line is good, so pounding the rock over and over and over again into that line wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. Rex Burkhead and Sony Michel are banged up, which leaves the backfield to Jeremy Hill and James White. Jeremy Hill's the bruiser, and James White is the pass catcher. This isn't to say that the other two backs won't be involved. I'm just recording this days before we'll know for sure, but I do expect James White to play a role this week and have flex appeal in leagues with 12 or more teams. I would play James White over if he starts like Chris Thompson, for instance. On the other side of things, I'm scared of Marshawn Lynch this week. I loved him as a value in drafts this year, and I think that he's going to be solid, but there are lots of reasons to be down on him in week one. We don't know exactly what this new Raiders offense will look like, and remember how I just talked about Ndamukong Suh? Well, he's on the Rams now. That Rams defensive line is frightening. Things aren't as scary outside of that line, but there's also the likelihood of a negative game script for Oakland, which may force Lynch off the field a bit more than usual. And speaking of negative game scripts, I already talked about Jimmy Garoppolo, but I have no idea how you can feel confident with either Alfred Morris or Matt Breida this week, specifically Alfred Morris. As I talked about on Tuesday's 15 Transaction show, Morris hasn't been much of a pass catcher throughout his career, so a negative game script would ruin his fantasy allure here in week one. Breida would then probably be on the field more, but we still don't know how they're going to utilize him as a pass catcher, despite his high success rate last year catching passes. And Kyle Juszczyk is also in the mix in that backfield. I just don't think it's worth starting either of them this week. Maybe one of them blows up, but the expected outcome isn't strong considering the matchup and ambiguity surrounding that 49ers backfield. The last dude I want to mention that I'm a little bit down on this week is Lamar Miller. New England could be tougher to stop the run this year with the addition of Danny Shelton, and the Texans have a really bad offensive line. In fact, offensive line guru Jim Sonnis ranked them as the worst offensive line in the league on NumberFire earlier this offseason. So Miller will have to see a lot of work through the air, which is fine. He might see some work there. I just would feel more confident in him with a better matchup in a game with a smaller spread. Experts have him at RB17, but I would put him closer to RB20 or 21. My deep play of the week at running back is Mike Gillisley. As I was writing up notes for today's podcast, I saw on Twitter that the Saints actually released Boston Scott, which gives them only Alvin Kamara and Mike Gillisley rostered at the position while Mark Ingram is suspended. In week one, they're facing the Bucs as 9.5-point favorites. Alvin Kamara will see a big uptick in volume with Mark Ingram sideline, but given the Saints were the 13th most run-heavy team last year, and Alvin Kamara only hit about a 31% rushing share without Adrian Peterson, Mike Gillisley could end up seeing double-digit touches this week. And in that offense, in the Saints' offense behind that offensive line, that's flex-worthy in deeper formats. Give me all of the Rams' pass catchers this week. Oakland added Rashawn Melvin this offseason in what I thought was actually one of their only good moves of the offseason, but Gerrion Conley will be starting and seeing a lot of Brandon Cooks this week, and he's just got a pair of games of experience at the NFL level. And then 33-year-old Leon Hall will be manning the slot, which makes me really excited for Cooper Kupp. Basically, guys, the Rams are in an incredible spot to score a lot of points this week, so having a piece of that offense makes a lot of sense. Golden Tate is also in a great position to score fantasy points this week from the slot. The Lions run three wide sets at one of the highest rates in the league, and when they do, that pushes Golden Tate to the slot. And when he's there against the Jets, he's going to see a lot of Buster Screen, who allowed the ninth most receptions to slot receivers last year, according to Pro Football Focus. The Lions are strong favorites in that game, which should help them hold on to the game flow, and that's always a good thing, but the Lions also threw the ball at the second highest rate in the red zone last year, which could lead to more passing touchdowns and rushing ones when they do score this week. The last player that I'm digging this week is someone who you may not have to start, but it's Allen Hurns. The Panthers' secondary could be pretty bad this year. They'll have a rookie corner on one side of the field and then James Bradbury on the other, and Bradbury allowed the second most yards in the league last year, according to PFF. Hurns seems to be the only wideout on the Cowboys roster right now that you can feel confident has some sort of role to start the year, though the risk with Allen Hurns is that he mostly played in the slot in Jacksonville, and Dallas will surely be asking him to do a little bit more. He's sort of a deep play, but not totally a deep play. I'm just intrigued by the matchup and what should be a negative script for Dallas this week. On the other side of things, I'm very, very down on Sammy Watkins in week one. Not only do we not know exactly how he's going to be used in the Kansas City offense, but he'll likely see a lot of Casey Hayward this week, who's one of the best corners in football. Tyreek Hill should be started against the tough Chargers secondary, but Sammy Watkins should be staying on your bench. And I'm also a little bit worried about Doug Baldwin, who's going to see Chris Harris Jr. in the slot. Harris allowed the 13th fewest yards per snap last year, according to Pro Football Focus, and he had the third highest snap to target rate, meaning teams are avoiding him because he's good at football. Baldwin should see enough volume given the lack of alternatives in Seattle's offense, but given the news that he's only at 80% or 85% to go along with this matchup, I'm looking at him more as a flex option this week instead of a wide receiver too. It will be interesting though to see how he looks and how healthy he looks. And lastly on the wide receivers that I'm lower on this week is Amari Cooper. It's really for a lot of the reasons that I mentioned before. The Raiders will have a new look offense, and that's a little scary. But Cooper will see a lot of Aqib Talib or even Marcus Peters, which does not bode very well. My hope is that they move Cooper into the slot more this season, but they're so weak at wide receiver right now that it might become more difficult to do a lot of things with their personnel, at least to start the year. So Cooper is sort of in that Doug Baldwin situation for me where you drafted him as a wide receiver too, but he's more of a flex play this week. My deep play at wide receiver this week is Danny Amendola. Tennessee was a bottom-tier defense at defending passes to the middle of the field last year, and there's not a whole lot of target competition for Amendola in Miami. It sounds like Devontae Parker will be out, which means Amendola will be competing for looks with Kenny Stills and Albert Wilson. I mean, I low-key love both Kenny Stills and Albert Wilson as players, but the Titans now have two strong starting corners in Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler, leaving Logan Ryan, the weakest corner of the three according to PFF's grades, to Danny Amendola. I think that he's a sneaky deep league play in what could be a negative game script for Miami. Because tight end isn't all that deep, my plan each week is to just give you guys a trio of tight ends you may not have thought about starting. So streamers, if you will. The first is Ricky Seals-Jones. Washington's actually been pretty mediocre against opposing tight ends in recent history. They allowed the fourth most yards to the position last season. Seals-Jones was one of the most efficient per-reception rookie tight ends in NFL history last year, but he only saw 30% or more of the Cardinals' snaps in two games. But he ran with the first team in the preseason, so he should see opportunity right away. Larry Fitzgerald has an incredible matchup here in Week 1, but don't sleep on his teammate, Ricky Seals-Jones. I also kind of like Jared Cook. There aren't many viable pass catchers in Oakland's offense, and as I noted earlier, the Rams have two very capable cornerbacks now. And as a result, there's a chance that Derek Carr funnels some of his looks towards the middle of the field, which is where Jared Cook will be. I actually could see Jared Cook finishing as a top 12 tight end this week. And lastly, there's Tyler Eifert. The Colts were the absolute worst team in the league at defending passes to the middle of the field last year, and as I noted with Andy Dalton, the Bengals are in a really strong spot this week. And how often are you able to actually use Tyler Eifert? He's healthy, or he's apparently healthy, and he's in one of the best matchups that you could find. I think that you can make the case that he's a top 10 tight end this week, though I do understand if you can't start him because you've got a safer option like Delanie Walker. Two defenses that you could look to stream in week one are Green Bay and Detroit. The Packers should be a lot better defensively this year than they were last year, and they're big favorites at home, which is always what you look for in a defensive streamer. Maybe you're a little bit worried about the new look Bears offense, and I do think that there's some reason to be, but you've got to trust that Rodgers and company are going to put the Packers defense in strong situations. And across the league, Mitch Trubisky still hasn't proven to be a top half quarterback. There's a lot of upside there, but they're not there yet. The Bears offense hasn't proven to us that they're going to be a tough matchup yet. So I think the Packers are a strong play in week one. As for Detroit, the defense itself could really struggle this year, but it's hard not to like them as big favorites at home against a quarterback who's getting his first ever career start. You'll want to start defenses like Baltimore and New Orleans over Detroit and Green Bay, but you could do a lot worse than the Packers and Lions as streaming choices here in week one. That's going to be it for today's matchup show. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. You can submit mailbag questions on there each week, and I would love to hear what you guys thought about today's matchup show. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you tomorrow.